Hey, it's Teen. The following podcast is a two-parter. It's the eve of the, quote, most important election of our lives if you live in America. John Pang, Carl Zaw, and I hosted a two-hour space, and we talked about everything from who we support, why, what's at stake, what's not at stake, and how the Asians and Asian diaspora may view and feel about this election.
I learned a lot since I last saw you. I learned that death is not the end.
Yeah, man, loud and clear.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're speaking from the same place.
Yeah. John's logged in, but we're just sitting in my living room in New York sharing the same phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
How have you been, Carl?
Oh, I'm just recovering. I'm almost healed from my motorcycle accident. The hole in my foot is finally being patched up.
Jeez. Dude, yeah. It's like scooter accident, surfing accident.
Yeah.
That's like pure Bali injuries. You know what I mean? I got
the price has to pay for living
life you live there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got jacked by a coral reef and then hit by a tuk-tuk. Well, good to hear your do it, because like, dude, your wife was like, she got on Twitter, she was like, I want to inform everyone that Carl is gonna step away from Twitter for a while because he's been in an accident and he's recovering, and then within 2 hours you were tweeting. So
dude, there's nothing I could do. I was laying in the hospital bed, and but I can still move my fingers, so you know that was my my sustain.
At least one finger.
Yeah, needed. He was like, "I got one finger. Bring me the Twitter. I got a shit post." All right, so we might as well get started. I'm recording the space, so I'll post it as usual. But yeah, man, figured you know John's here visiting in New York. And you seem to have a little free time. So we thought, hey, tomorrow's the U.S. election. Why don't we share some thoughts about it? And I guess I'll set the stage a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, look, I mean, so much has already been said about this thing, like from election predictions to what do you think what's the differential in policy between Trump and Kamala vis-a-vis the issue that I care about, whether it's Gaza, whether it's abortion or whatever. And I don't mean to dismiss the importance of these issues, but it's been litigated, right? So I just thought maybe just kind of give your – maybe we could just talk about, like, your impression of – I don't know, man. What do you want to do? I was thinking about talking about the election in light of, like, just sort of, like, larger issues that are in play here in the U.S. And maybe, Carl, like, the view from the outside, like, you know – do people care about this election outside the US, or is this just as a sideshow at this point and we're just living in an American psychodrama? And you know, I don't know, what do you see from the outside?
I mean from what I've seen on Douyin videos, it seems like people in China treat this as entertainment, you know, pure comedy. You know, they have Kamala Harris and Trump duets in Chinese. It's highly entertaining for the Chinese audience, but from my own perspective, it's, you know, when they talk about harm reduction candidate, right? So I look at, okay, which one is not less likely to blow up the world? You know, I think it's a given both candidates sucks and the America will probably continue on its decline, but I'm just looking at which one would just, you know, let the decline continue but not blow up the world? That's the only angle I look at.
You're looking for a soft landing?
I don't know if there's going to be a soft landing, man. I don't know. I just, you know, if America implodes, I, you know, as long as it doesn't bring the rest of the world with it, I'm okay with that.
But the view inferred in that view is the idea that America is in terminal decline. I mean, I don't know if I necessarily, I don't know if that's a granted thing, but is that like a very common view now outside that America is just so crazy that we're bound for some sort of, you know, calamity or something? Or,
well, I don't know.
Is that how bad we look?
I don't know if it's as over prevailing view. That's my personal view. I don't think America is in terminal decline, but it's on secular decline. You know, the trend is clear. It's going down. You know, whether you know it's gonna bottom out at some point, we don't know. But
So basically, it's like, look, you guys figure it out. Just don't screw me up too bad. Don't take me down with you.
Exactly.
Okay, gotcha. I'm all alone in the world, man. We're all alone with us Americans. You know what I mean? No one cares about us anymore.
That's pretty much been our one frame of reference for us, right? Mm-hmm. This idea of it's in decline, but with which candidate would it be less catastrophic? That you want, so to speak, a soft landing, not something catastrophic, the world blowing up with the distinct possibility with some crazy escalation in East Asia, for example, or Middle East or Ukraine. So I think that's a very reasonable sense. And I think people, back in China, the distinct sense is Carl is right. People are taking this as entertainment.
Mm.
And that's because from the foreign policy, from the receiving end of it perspective, there really isn't that much difference between the two candidates. I mean, I think
on a policy basis, right?
The escalation is going to, I mean, the anti-China stuff is going to continue. The policy is going to continue.
Yeah.
There may be more, I mean, with Trump, if he actually goes through with his promise of tariffs, that could be quite disruptive in business terms, in economic terms. But it's not as if under the Democrats there won't also be further economic tightening, further escalation in the economic warfare. So net, it's not like.
So you're saying on policy wise, it's a toss up.
It's a toss up in terms of specific, direct
policy impacts, foreign policy, domestic, whatever.
Yeah.
There's not a obvious. I mean, I don't even know if Trump has articulated something that's radically different. Just in terms of policy.
Yeah. He hasn't. It sounds, of course, the all tariff thing is crazy, but it's crazy for Americans.
Yeah.
It's the domestic market. It's Americans who are going to bear the brunt of that.
Yeah.
So it really can't get any worse in some ways. So the way to appreciate this is to contrast this with 2016. There, I think rest of the world did sort of sit there with bated breath going, are they really going to elect this lunatic? But everyone's seen 4 years of Trump.
Yeah.
And I don't forget. They had it and it was bad, but he survived it. And the Trump administration just on the economic side just doubled down on all the measures.
Mm-hmm.
So if Trump was the first,
you mean Biden?
Yeah, sorry.
You're saying Biden took his trade war and you know just continued it
and just continued
same direction
and added more to it.
Yeah.
So you don't expect a Harris administration. You wouldn't expect them to reverse. Any of the by now the bipartisan consensus for tough economic measures against China.
Yeah.
So the hostility is going to be there anyway, economically. So then, in order to distinguish between them from an outside perspective, you'd have to take the next step that most people don't. They just stand there and laugh. The next step would be to look at these candidates and then at what they represent and then at the coalitions they represent and then ask the deeper question, what is this going to do to America?
Okay, but let me ask you a threshold question, right? Okay, so if this is like every other election and, you know, I mean, this was the joke in like during the Simpsons era, right? Like in the 90s, where you would have two identical twin aliens run. And the joke is that, you know, it's the same thing. Like, you know, it's all a sham. You're voting for the same, you know, either way, there's not going to be any meaningful difference, right?
Yeah.
And I think if you just look at the policy, it's not really that different than exactly. Your election.
Yeah.
But why is it that there is existential fear and I would say the Democrats have run a campaign of fear. They're fearful. They're not putting a positive vision of what they want to do. They're just trying to put out this, you know, this whatever, this threat. They're trying to put it down. And why is there such an existential fear of Trump? Like, why, if he's really not that meaningfully different,
yeah,
then what is, why does it seem like there's such a deep fear of him?
Yeah.
That, you know.
So the fear is, domestically, the drama is domestic. And it's real. So it's really good, interesting if we start to dig into that and ask what these issues are domestically. Externally, and also superficially, there's really nothing. That's really about nothing. Mm. So that's why
they're not trying to put this guy in prison.
It's a low stakes thing externally.
Yeah.
Say, okay, look at this really morally urgent issue. You know, what's going on in the Middle East? Neither side is going to give you any relief there.
Yeah.
They're both equally sort of Zionist, etc. So that's off the table. And then, as I just said, economically against China, you're going to see pretty consistent, no difference. But domestically, what it represents is, that's interesting.
Yeah.
The drama, it's drama inside and just entertainment outside.
Yeah, but, I think so.
This is not to dismiss the importance of the choice facing Americans tomorrow.
Carl, do you have a thought on that? Like, why is
there is a little bit foreign policy difference, right? I mean, the Republican Party, they want to pull out of Ukraine or cool off on Ukraine front, make up with Russia, and then concentrate on China. Whereas the Democrats the current DNC establishment want to, you know, plow ahead, continue with the proxy war in Ukraine against Russia, and both sides agree on Israel, so that front is not going to change. So the only thing that the real difference is whether to pivot away from Ukraine war and concentrate on confronting China. That's a real foreign policy difference. But even that front might not make a much difference, because we remember in the first Trump term, Trump also wanted to reset with Russia back then, but he lost the fight with the deep state. You know, the deep state and NATO bureaucracy forced him to expel Russian diplomats, and the relationship actually gotten worse. And I don't think he will win this time either. So I think there's the fear that Ting was talking about. There's a fear, of course, there's a fear of all these people going to lose jobs. You know, all these like all these people in the Democrats is running the show, they're going to be out of a job if they lose to the Trump. So of course there's a fear. I think like the U.S. is fundamentally a career society. It's all about jobs and career. And that's what those people care about. So they're trying to export their fear to the public, right? I mean, it's very obvious that they're
that was always the case, though, Carl.
With any administration.
With any administration in previous elections, that was always the case. And why is it different this time?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I would observe that this time around, they've raised the ante so much, for example, in the way they prosecuted Trump. They've used the law against their opponent, all the lawfare and so on, that there's going to be a reckoning, that they fear a reckoning when the other side comes in. They've made peaceful transition, a stable transition, more and more difficult, or they've made it impossible in their own eyes.
Yeah, I mean, I still think there, I mean, because it's the fear isn't just among high-ranking Democratic officials or people in the administration. Yeah. I think it's it goes down to the actual people, like the Kamala supporters.
Yeah.
And this widespread, and I think it's real. I think Trump derangement syndrome is like a real phenomenon. Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there is a fear. And there's something, I don't know, there's something about...
They've internalized the whole thing. They've turned it into something like really into kind of a psychodrama and almost a religious thing as well.
Yeah, I mean...
Democrat, both sides, but...
I mean, I
you wouldn't expect the liberals to have done this, but they have.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I noticed is like me being, I don't know if it's relevant that I'm Chinese, but not being like a multi-generational white American, it gives me a certain view of this where for all they claim to hate each other, a lot of times it's within the same family. Like literally, you know, it's like my Trump uncle or, you know, like whatever. And a lot of it comes from people who, from my perspective, feel maybe a little bit uncomfortably close to MAGA, you know, in terms of like it's my own family or sometimes my spouse. I secretly found that my boyfriend watches, you know, Charlie Kirk or something like that. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. And there is a fear among white men, especially. They feel like they need to. I think this bodes well for Trump tomorrow, by the way. I think there is a deep-seated shame in being seen as a Trump supporter. Because as a white man, I think that comes with a lot of accusations that they're white supremacists, which is why I do not understand. Well, I simply don't share in the discomfort to say I'm voting for Trump tomorrow, because to me, he's just another candidate. I don't, because as an Asian dude, I don't want the risk of someone accusing me of being a white supremacist. It's it's not a likely thing.
But given your profession and sort of New Yorker and so on, doesn't it knock you out of the, you know, the whole kind of liberal consensus? That I mean,
I don't talk about it. I don't go around telling people. But
even here, even online, even in Twitter's space, you're putting it out there. Like a couple of months ago, you said, "Okay,
I'm
voting for Trump."
Yeah,
there was a lot of pushback, right? There we pushback, or you might.
Yeah, but I'm immune to a lot of the worst accusations.
It's because it's you.
If someone tells me, like, dude, if you think Trump is going to be better on foreign policy than, you know, what I think is your preferred foreign policy than Kamala, it's like, okay, that's a fair critique. I'm not ashamed. I could be wrong. I don't care. But, like, I don't have, like, I don't question myself as to whether, am I secretly attracted to Trump because I'm a racist? Or I hate, you know, everyone's xenophobe or whatever. Like I don't carry that baggage with me, right? And I think that allows me to see the MAGA movement more clearly because I don't question myself as much because I'm immune to a lot of the accusations simply because I'm not a multi-generational white guy. And I do think that I've noticed that MAGA is not it just doesn't seem that racist to me. At least not this time around. I know there's a xenophobic thing to it.
Oh, no, not this, yeah. We were just talking about it earlier. Yeah. It's a very different campaign. There's a big difference between this campaign and 2016. This is one of the things. There's a lot less of that, of that dark stuff, even though they're playing it up, they're calling him a fascist, a Nazi, and so on.
Right? Yeah.
But, you know, there's this, they're going after the immigrants.
He's using racist dog whistling to do it.
He's still doing the racist dog whistling.
Yeah, he's doing it.
But this is not all there is to the campaign. They're very much more there's much more confidence now in a positive message.
Yeah.
And I've noticed in the last week of messages and tweets from Trump, just these extraordinary messages, you know, like to the Lebanese community, to minorities. he's basically outflanked the Democrats on this as the more minority, more friendly, more conscious of the minorities.
And it's not just him, but like MAGA itself.
Yeah, MAGA itself has taken a positive tone.
But in a different way, in that I think there's actually overlapping mindset. This isn't about how do you powerful white people, what are you going to do with us subordinate racial minorities, which is a very white liberal thing where they fashion themselves to be the protectors of minorities. And they view, like, say, the black vote as they own the black vote. I mean, like, with the shit that, like, fucking Biden said, if you don't vote for me, like, they're going to put you, you ain't black. Like, what? Right? And then after fucking 4 years during COVID, the kind of shit that I saw in terms of in New York City, it's a liberal progressive hegemony, right?
Yeah.
The way they just totally condescend to and erase anything coming out of the Asian community, immigrant community. Yeah. I mean, they will try to paint Asian immigrants as co-conspirators with white supremacists because we're saying there's a crime problem.
Yeah.
Right? So after 4 years of that shit, I've had enough. And I've seen enough to understand liberal racism and why for a lot of minorities, they're more comfortable with MAGA, more comfortable with Trump because they don't condescend.
It's definitely
in the same
the case
way
with the Asian minority. Right?
They don't feel ownership over you. They may feel like you're other. Yeah. But the thing is, that's mutual. Like, we think of them as other too. But the liberal whites feel a sense of entitlement over us.
Yeah.
And I found that really despicable. And I think over 4 years, I think that was one of the big things that kind of made me less scared of the Trump racism.
Yeah.
More skeptical of white liberal progressive saviors who are constantly like harping on about their racial sensitivity and how they're not like those other big whites.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're seeing more Black and Latino support for Trump, because they're like, they feel the same way.
Yeah. And they're going to find more Asian support as well.
Huge amounts of Asian support. Yeah.
The Asians who are not liberals, not in the sort of professionally liberals, Carl,
go ahead. Sorry.
Reminds me of that debate, that televised debate between Jake Sullivan's wife and that Chinese lady.
Yeah. That was very
sensible. like that Jake Sullivan's wife, she's speaking about how common people is suffering, average American suffering, and then the Chinese lady corrected her. It's like, dude, you're like a multimillionaire. You don't know how the common Americans live. You know, you probably don't even shop for your own groceries. And I think that, it's
go back to your $2 million house in Alexandria, wherever the fuck you're from.
Yeah, it's not that I support the policy of that the Chinese MAGA lady. It's just that I really enjoy her taking down of Jake Solomon's wife. This like really snobby liberal white woman who pretends she's really deeply caring about the underclass when they don't. and just like poking holes through her hypocrisy. I mean, I just enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
That was satisfying.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think part of it is like Carl. I'm not attracted to the Trump movement for any policy reason per se.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say that he is more openly talking about peace and stopping war. But on the other hand, the opposition party, the party that's out of power, will always sort of say that. Easier said than done, right? Mm. Easier said than done. So I don't fully believe him on that. I mean, I like that he says it, but I really get the sense, if I watch a MAGA rally, the overwhelming sense is these are people who are feeling the effects of American decline and the excesses of our financialized economy. And I know all about this stuff because I work in it. And just the type of like the type of GDP that we have. Like, we got a lot of GDP, but it's a certain kind of GDP. it's a lot of exploitation. It's a lot of usury. It's a lot of gambling. It's a lot of encouraging people to sell themselves online in increasingly exploitative, self-exploitative ways. And it's a lot of government grift. It's a lot of corruption. It's a lot of terrible shit. And it's all counted as GDP. And up here, we just see the number, and it's like, what are you complaining about? This has been an overriding thing for the past couple years. It's like, all the economic indicators are showing we're doing great. Low unemployment, inflation back to 2.3, 2.4, 2.1 even. You know, everything's good, right? All the things on the dashboard are going good. And yet everyone, so many people are saying they don't feel, I think over half of Americans think we're in a recession. And of course, you'll get the Paul Krugman types that go, don't be fucking ridiculous. How do you know? You don't have a PhD in economics. You don't have the right to declare a recession, you know? I think what happens is, like, I genuinely see people in MAGA are the people in Rust Belt states and in rural states where the economy has failed them first. They were the first to be sacrificed by this economy. And now, and I think that's why the Republican Party was the first to fall to this Trump insurgency, whereas the Democrats held it off, is because the ravages of the current economic path happened first in rural red areas. And this is why I think the Democrats now are running a fear campaign.
Yeah.
That's all they have. They don't have any positive messaging, whatever. They're just trying to gaslight them.
They, not the MAGA, more than the MAGA side, who are running a fear campaign.
Yeah.
You have to fear the orange man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's just not real.
Yeah.
Whereas what the MAGA guys are talking about has some basis. There actually is a border crisis. It gets racialized unnecessarily. But yes, there are real issues here.
Oh, man, I love it. I love it when a white liberal tells me that the border issue is fake and that I've been gaslit by right-wing media in New York City, where my all... If you're in my building now. You see my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And how heavily immigrant and Asian and Hispanic and, like, there's no white people here, right? And most of the people
here are pretty... I was walking around with him. Can I say this is some part of Queens, right?
Yeah,
Queens. We're in Queens, okay? And he's like, where are the white people? He goes like, this is a inverse segregation, man. This is what the world looks like without white people.
Segregation. White people are not allowed here, right? There's no services for them here.
They don't come here, right? And it keeps the rent affordable slightly. And but yeah, you're telling me in this neighborhood, and people are concerned about that issue, right?
Yeah. I mean, I talk to my neighbors, like, it's a friendly building and it's a friendly neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I talk to my neighbors who are, you know, last time I was talking to a guy, he's an immigrant from Costa Rica. I mean, he's been here a long time, but he's an immigrant. And he complains, just like most people here complain about the crimes. And we have notorious crimes here. And they're, the New York Post is a red baiting newspaper. But they are sometimes right. And a lot of this stuff comes down, like, we have a gang problem here.
It's a
You know, and it's just like, why are fucking white liberals telling me I'm a racist? I'm like, do you know where I live? Do you know who my neighbors are? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know. I guess I feel like my point is, I'm not a white dude. So I'm immune to a lot of the accusations, and I really have a lot of sympathy for the MAGA view this time around. And I don't really give a shit what people say about me for saying that, because I think a lot of that is just fucking your white liberal baggage. And that includes non-white liberals too, because they go full fucking hook, line, and sinker for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
Because they want to be respectable minorities among their, in their elite.
Yeah. No, the panic is
professional.
The existential threat is to liberalism. It's to liberal primacy.
Yeah.
Back in America.
Yeah.
And why are we supposed to be concerned about that?
Carl, does this make any sense to you, or are you just like, what are you Americans fucking talking about?
Yeah, he's a bum.
This election is just freaking, it's all over the place, man. Now you have Dick Cheney and Richard Spencer, you know, they are openly declaring for Kamala Harris. You know, what the heck is going on, right?
Yeah.
So, like the Dick Cheney, you know, that's why I tweet about it. You know, like all these Kamala Harris voters, now you're voting with Dick Cheney and Richard Spencer. This is really crazy. And like I say, I'm just trying to see, okay, which candidate is less likely to blow up the world. This is my perspective from Bali, right? You know, I care less about what happens inside US because I'm not there right now, but I just don't want any spillover effect.
But a huge data point in that, I agree with you about, is, you know, in the foreign policy side, is look where all the neocons are now. You know, look where they've set up home, or look what they've taken over. It's all on the Democrat side. Those guys have an impeccable record of starting wars. I mean, just objectively, that's where they are.
DNC is
the candidate of the deep state, if I may use that term. I mean, Harris is how all the backing of the whole national security complex and of the neocons. So just as, you know, that's why I say if you dig a little bit in, you go to the next layer. What I said earlier was it looks like, you know, from the outside, it's entertainment. There are no real stakes in policy terms. And I meant to reflect what observers from the outside, what the consensus opinion might be for someone from Singapore or Malaysia or even China looking in. But I actually do think there will be that there are serious foreign policy differences or possibilities, and in that I share your view, Carl. But I share your priorities. But and I think that the MAGA side is likely to be less dangerous in that regard. That's just my
on assessment. The foreign policy side.
Yeah, on foreign policy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've long thought that the choice here is, do we, because obviously the big issue here is that we have a lack of unity in this country.
Yeah,
that's the big problem. Yeah. Right, the underlying problem is this lack of cohesion in American society.
Yeah,
and yet we still have to come towards some consensus of what to do.
Yeah.
And it seems like we're bifurcating towards, do we start World War III and hope that we come out of World War III the way we came out of the last two?
Yeah.
Or do we have a Civil War II?
Yeah.
You know, maybe not with muskets and, you know, killing each other, but like, do we have a foreign conflict to unite us? Or do we have a domestic conflict to settle our differences? And I think all the foreign wars that they're looking for are completely illegitimate. You have no reason to start them. But all the domestic conflicts that they're trying to avoid are entirely legitimate.
Yeah, legitimate.
So we should have the domestic fight. Those are legitimate grievances. Yeah. And all the people in the MAGA side, like, they have enumerated so many fucking valid grievances.
Yeah.
And yet we continue to paint them as orcs. Like, how is this not class warfare? This is clearly an evolving class consciousness, because you have dirtbag leftists, podcasters, and you have anti-imperialist serious people like Jeffrey Sachs showing up on quote right-wing media like Tucker Carlson. And then in the meantime, you have Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney campaigning for Kamala.
Yeah.
This is a realignment that has nothing to do with right versus left or liberal versus conservative. This is something new. And from my perspective, this looks like a real realignment towards like a bona fide class grievance. And they continue to use accusations of racism and homophobia and other things to try and divide, to keep that from saying it can't. If that's not really what it is, what it really is these people. And white people say that, oh, you don't know these people, man. These are like my uncles and my friends from high school. They'll fucking eat you for dinner. You know, they're gonna eat your babies. And I'm like, what?
Well, yeah.
Maybe you had got bullied in high school. That's not my fucking problem.
We talk about that guy who's the Midwestern liberal that you...
Yeah. Yeah. The guy on Twitter. And
you said, okay, Trump. And then he said, you don't understand.
He said, so I said, look, man, I'm a high income upper income New York City professional racial minority. And even I see what's going on. Like, dude, people in MAGA treat each other better than the liberals treat each other.
Yeah.
And he had we're very cordial with each other. I really like his account. He mostly focuses on mid-century or early 20th century architecture in the Midwest, right? Like stuff like that. But suddenly he got so tired of me touting my Trump nonsense. And he said, you know what? That's exactly why you sound so naive. And because you don't know what you're talking about. He was like, you admitted that's what you are. And you don't know what MAGA is really about because you've never been to a MAGA rally. You don't know these people. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And I said, okay, granted. I mean, like, that's valid, man. I don't go to Michigan. I don't know what's going on over there, right? But I'll say the same about you. I was like, you're a Detroit liberal surrounded by MAGA orcs or whatever. You have no idea what it's like to live in New York City where there's a liberal progressive stranglehold on all politics here. And you don't know what it was like to be an Asian New Yorker during COVID and all the shit that happened to us.
Yeah.
That the liberal progressives completely fucking, not only did they suppress it, but they were complicit in it and they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about when it comes to you, but you don't know what the fuck you're talking about when it comes to my life here. So go have at it, dude. Go vote Kamala. I don't give a shit, but I'm voting Trump. And you know, we're both equally naive about each other's situations. Go vote your interest. I vote mine. You know, and isn't that what you're supposed to do? But yeah, I'm ranting. No,
but the MAGA side, it seems to me, is clearly more. It's a broader tent. It's a far broader tent, and the types of conversation going on in it are much broader. There may be people that are really, you know, you want to characterize in whatever way as these orcs, these fascists, whatever. But they're talking to each other. And I myself feeling I could have a better conversation in there with those guys.
Oh, yeah. I'd rather hang out with them.
Liberals.
I would rather hang out with them.
Exactly. If I'm going to hang out at party, I would hang out with them. Rather than...
I'm not going to no fucking Lady Gaga concert.
Exactly.
Or, you know,
I'd be very uncomfortable on the liberal
side. And then, you know, calling her my queen and shit. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to fucking do that. I don't feel it.
Cultural, even gender-wise, even sort of sexual, right? You know, this all this weirdness about masculinity.
Yeah.
I don't have your problem.
I don't have these problems, man.
Exactly. Yeah. So... The liberal one is just an alien territory. It's a kind of a moonscape.
Yeah, I mean, I am sympathetic to liberals in these areas that are surrounded by. You know, I'm sure it's hostile. I'm sure I wouldn't like being in that situation. But I'm sorry, I got to vote my life, right? I got to think about it from my own perspective here. And I frankly think that that liberal progressives who talk a lot about class consciousness and socialist revolutions and all these other things that they dig out of their leftist literatures, why do they refuse to see that, like, it's possible that class consciousness can arise in America in a way that you may find distasteful? You know what I mean? I mean, isn't this why it's difficult? Because nobody actually likes being in a humiliating class socioeconomic condition. None of us like that. None of us want to be like that. But the question is, like, do you actually feel like these people are part of your society and your country? And do you give a shit about them? Or are you just going to continue to fucking lie about them? I mean, I have no reason to say this, man, because I don't have any stake in the white rural people of America. I don't have any connection to them. I don't really know many of them. But I've just seen just this horrible shit said about them. And it reminds me of stuff that liberal progressives say about the poor immigrant communities in the United States, in the big cities, and the way we get scapegoated. Well, I wouldn't say I play act as one because I don't live in the wealthy neighborhoods and stuff. So I do have a connection here, but it's like, this reminds me of how you fucking talk about us here in the cities.
Yeah, yeah.
And how
yeah.
you just talk over us and accuse us of whatever the fuck you yeah, want to accuse us yeah. of. And it's exactly like, that's exactly what they're saying about the Trump world. And so, yeah, you know, whatever.
There's this other element as well. Remember, Carl, when they were talking about these guys at the at Madison Square Garden and making it out to be, you know, literally a Nazi rally, the way they were painting these guys and the propaganda turn on them, that reminded me of, it's exactly the same type of coverage that they do for China, for Russia, for enemies yeah. outside.
Lying, gaslighting.
Yeah, yeah, lying and gaslighting yeah. and the propaganda, right? All the exaggeration and basically casting them as, you know, the movement as totalitarian. It's the same thing. Of course, these guys, they don't see it, right? These Trumps don't see it, but it's the same apparatus, in fact, the same propaganda and media apparatus applied to them. So we can see that.
I don't know, man. You guys are all crazy.
Yeah, we are.
We are. This is why I got the fuck out, dude. This is why I mean.
It makes sense, dude. It makes sense.
Can't.
It makes sense. You know, the author Haruki Murakami.
Yeah,
he's very popular here in America.
Yeah,
he won some award, and then he gave a speech about how like, they're like, because he's a Jungian, like all his stories are. Like have a like a you know, which is kind of cliche, but sort of like a you know, the Jungian setup.
Yeah.
And he said that nations also have like a sort of like a shadow. And he said it's very dangerous when nations don't, and he was talking about Japan. He was saying Japan has a really dark shadow that they don't acknowledge. And they try to externalize and to sort of project out, try to pretend it's not part of them.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what's going on in the US. And that's why I don't, because I guess I feel a little bit, the three of us in varying degrees, you and Carl grew up in part in the United States and then has left. You didn't grow up here, but you spent time here.
Yeah.
But I now no longer live here. I was born here. Yeah. But to some degree, like we have varying degrees of personal identification with the U.S.
Yeah.
But I would say like it's less difficult for me, I guess, or for us to sort of like, quote, integrate that shadow, because I don't feel a sense of, since I'm not even that bought in, I don't feel the sense of like horror or shame about looking at what's happened to a lot of Americans and how bad it's gotten for them. It's not hard for me to see that, but I feel like a lot of Americans just don't want to admit how bad the situation is. Like they don't want to confront that shadow. And that's why there's just this insane psychodrama that from the outside, Carl just sees a bunch of fucking crazy people. Cause we're like fighting, we're having like a, some kind of, like a schizo reaction here, you know, they loathe and fear this very people who are like, they're connected to.
Yeah.
Which is all, you know,
that fear and loathing is really something else.
I think for people, especially in the global South, I mean, like, it's just weird because still US is still one of the, you know, most wealthiest country in the world. I mean, even working class people in US is in much better material condition than say some Indonesia, right? But here what I see is like people are much happier. People are much happier here, yeah, where I am. Where maybe there's not much as much material comfort than it is in the United States, but people generally are much more optimistic about their future and generally much more content with their current lot than the Americans right now. And they, you know, so probably,
Carl, they're probably less confused about what they believe in too, and they're not, you know, constantly worried about what, you know, how they appear to other people and whether they'll be mistaken for, you know, a white supremacist or something. You
know? I mean, that
they don't have those issues.
Just the very thought is hilarious.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. We got someone requesting Shadow. Should we let him say his piece? Here we go.
I don't know if we covered the main, some of the main things we wanted to say.
Yeah. I mean, we'll go back, but Shadow, you are the speaker now if you want to say your piece.
Hey, guys. I just want to say that I'm like a Pakistani. I've been raised and born in Canada. I've been to Canada, USA a lot of times, Washington, D.C., Washington, and to New York. And I've lived here for 20 years now in Canada. I would say, even if when I'm Canada, I think that Canada depends on what leader USA has. So right now, we are also going through a dumb elections like Pierre Poilievre and Trudeau.
Yep.
So I was just yesterday I was talking to my dad and I was saying that I think that if Trump wins, then Trudeau is not gonna come here, or if Kamala wins, they're not gonna let the conservative government of Pierre Poilievre come. So it's like totally depends on USA, on our government.
Yeah,
it's like a total shit show, total clown work. Like, my dad that doesn't have a citizenship in USA just went there and voted in New York because they don't need ID. And it's
so... Okay, good. Be careful what you say, sir.
It's so dumb. Yeah. Like the whole northern area, Mexico, and the whole area depends on USA and who rules it, and like millions of lives, and like I think it's just a shit show. I've been seeing these videos, like seeing the people arguing at each other. My dad was like, "It's like you have to choose from worse, like you have to choose one." One of the evil, like you
choose an evil. It is a choice between evils.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I don't think it's a choice between good or bad. I think it's a choice between like, are you going to confront the fucking reality, or are you going to continue with these liberal delusions and think you can solve all your problems through another fucking war?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've seen to my family too. Like, I don't think that if Trump win, I think if Trump doesn't win, we saw this like last elections too, then the riots happened in Capitol. I think it's going to be way worse this time if Trump doesn't win.
I don't know. I get what you're saying. I'm not so convinced that a lot of the fear-mongering over that is just trying to whip people into making sure that they vote for the, you know, essentially the incumbent candate.
I mean, the incumbent party. I really don't know. Yeah. I think that's the real unknown. It depends on how they behave as well.
I mean, frankly, I thought that based on what I've heard from people like Stephen Sund, who was the chief of Capitol Police on Jan 6, I don't think the Jan 6 story. I think the Jan 6 story is quite rizzed up. In terms of.
Oh, it is rizzed
up. You know, in terms of.
Yeah, we're January 6th deniers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Count me in. I mean, that's.
I mean, I don't think it was a good event, but I think they rizzed it up big time.
Damn, that was not like that. Yeah. They talked about.
I also wanted to say this.
Right.
That. I wanted to say this. Like, if. The riots and like protests happen, I think they want this to happen. So then, because last time they put the whole riot thing on Trump and said like he insisted it and like he brought it down, and Trump already has like pending like in his like pending like he's been like charged, you know. So I think if he loses, he's gonna be put in jail. That's their like policy. Like, they're gonna put him in jail if he doesn't like win, because right now he's out of the jail because he's.
Well, that's what they tried to do.
Yeah, they already tried to do it.
They're literally trying to lock him up. Yeah. It's not, yeah, you know, yeah. That was gonna be their October surprise. Yeah.
They all, just because he's running for the presidential election, that's why they're not being able to do that. If he loses, he's not like escaping jail.
Could be, and Elon Musk loses all his money, gives away all his money.
I guess I feel like the election is really not as important as people say, because like I said, I don't think there's much of a policy distinction between the two as of yet. Mm-hmm. I think Trump is a destroyer. He's destroying the liberal consensus.
Yeah. No, in that
and
sense,
it's we can't get anywhere for like you need someone to clear cut. And to till the soil.
I think it's important. It's not important in terms of direct policy, but I think you and I have talked about this before. It's below the level of policy.
Yeah, for sure. It's
about, in the first case, the structure of the political parties, what they represent. There's a realignment going on, right? They're being turned around and becoming more quote unquote. Well, at least on the Republican side, it's a different party. There was a Republican Party before Trump and the Republican Party after, and they're not the same thing anymore. And you know, there's a question about whether this is going to happen on the Democrat side. But in that sense, this election is very important. And then it's about the political consensus in the country and where it's headed. As far as the state is concerned, the whole apparatus, the financial apparatus, the war machine, maybe less so in the immediate future, but surely in the longer term. And then the third thing is this, at the next level, what happens to the kind of the social and political fabric of the country, where you think it might go if the Democrats win versus where you think it might go if it's Trump, right? Where the country goes. So, and I think that if it was my view would be that if it was Kamala and the Democrats, you're just forestalling the inevitable and necessary reckoning with this political class, with the liberals, with this ideology. At least you have some reckoning with it if Trump, Vance and company come in. There'll be a pushback. They may be rethinking it. They'll be fighting it. They may lose that battle, as Carl says, but there'll be a reckoning with it. If you go down the Harris path, it's nothing. It's like they, you know, have they acknowledged there's something wrong with the system, with themselves ideologically, with who they represent, who they are? Nothing. Which means that the collapse, when it does come, really will be more serious.
I think Carl's perspective to me is really interesting because he's not here, and Carl follows, and you do too.
Yeah, I'm not here.
I'm
just visiting.
Yeah, you follow what's going on in Asia, in ASEAN, in BRICS.
Yeah,
and the rest of the world is starting to. Like they're sort of creating the new world order, and the U.S. I think is, how do I put it? Like, it doesn't matter who wins. There's much greater forces in play that are determining our future.
Yeah,
it's not just who's the president. Like, it doesn't, like, Trump can't reverse this. Kamala can't reverse this. It just doesn't. I think, like, it just doesn't matter. And so I think whoever wins, the U.S. is still going to face steep economic decline. And I think the result of that will be that the Democrats are going to have a sort of revolution within the party, too. Because there's going to be more and more people who identify as Democrats who are going to be suffering from the same diseases of despair that the MAGA Republicans have, right?
Well, Democrats need to be defeated first.
Politics may not matter as much in terms of our future path as the like built-in like decline of the United States in the very near term, you know. And so, in that sense, I think if Kamala, maybe whoever wins is going, like, maybe this is like maybe it's a Pyrrhic victory for whoever wins, because they're going to get blamed for the shit that's going to happen over the next 4 years, whether we like it or not. You know? So.
Well, I mean, right now, you guys already pointed out, and the Republican already had a soft coup, you know, with the Trump taking over. Nothing has changed on the Democrat side yet. So the Democrats need to lose if the for their internal change in the Democratic Party. You know, DNC has totally, you know, kicked the people like Bernie's to the curb, and they were able to like resist any kind of change to their establishment rule. So if they win again, that means Democrats is going to do the same thing they always do. So they actually have to lose if the Democrats need to is to fundamentally change like the Republican Party. So it's interesting right now. It's the Republican side that's responding to kind of the populist surge. And then the Democrats are holding the line. I mean, I guess that's only, I think, the only difference the election will make. And I don't buy it like all the Civil War talk, because I think Americans, they talk a big deal online, you know, but there's not going to be, that's not going to translate into action. I don't think there's going to be like Civil War, like the Netflix series or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I think that's fear mongering. Yeah. I just, beaming up, you're a speaker now too. I think you're hailing from Korea, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, quick
follow up on Carl's thing. You know, so if you're from the outside and you think, as many people do, that America needs to sort of decline more gracefully, if you were an accelerationist, you would vote for Harris. You'd want that because that way there's no fundamental reform, going down a totally unsustainable path to a kind of explosive.
They're barely holding it together.
Yeah, they're barely holding it together.
This shit's falling apart.
Yeah, they're engaged in a bloody genocide. You know, how much worse can it get? So keep these people in place and then watch the kind of collapse or implosion.
All right, that's the end of the first part of this two-part podcast. The second part is also on the free feed. We're releasing both of these as free. And it's just the next episode in the queue.